Hello, I'm Miranda Lamutanta and this is Utopian Roots. I'm really excited about this interview. It's with Izzy Brown from Australia. She's a musician, a filmmaker and a force of nature. And she's a really tireless and powerful activist. Izzy talks quite a lot about the importance of truth-telling in Utopia, and I think this is a really interesting point. So I wanted to contextualise some of the truths that she touches on, because some of the subjects might not be familiar to you. So she talks about West Papua. West Papua is a country in between Australia and Indonesia. It was invaded by Indonesia in 1962, and since then, it's kind of been in a slow-motion genocide. So the fight for freedom goes on under military occupation. She also mentions the Aboriginal Tent Embassy. Now, this is a protest camp that's been in Canberra, literally opposite the Australian Situ government since 1972. And it's central to the Aboriginal campaign for political rights and sovereignty and justice. The other thing she mentions is Uncle Kevin. And Uncle Kevin is a total legend. Uncle Kevin Buzzacott, he's an Arabunna elder, and he's a peacemaker and a campaigner for land and water against uranium mining. Izzy was talking to me via the internet from Australia, and there are a few sound issues towards the end of the interview, which it's just one of those things. Yeah, so here you go. Oh, so I'm really excited to be chatting to Izzy Brown from Combat Wombat, legendary and infamous Australian hip hop band. Oh, so many things I could say to introduce you, Izzy. You're like a fly in the ointment of injustice and the establishment everywhere, and so creative. You know, I've always really appreciated your like very unfiltered creativity. You know, you just go for it and do things and make things happen. Don't spend too long analysing.
I probably should, but that's all right.
And we had some really incredible adventures together, stuff that really changed my life anyway, back in 2000 in the desert in Australia, protesting against the uranium mines with Indigenous mob and protesting against detention centres for asylum seekers like Woomera. And then you came over to Europe, didn't you? And we did a tour together, an anti-nuclear tour, Operation Alchemy.
Wow.
And got into all kinds of scrapes.
Yes, lots of adventures.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. It was a few years ago now, and yeah.
Was. And I think back at those times, there was actually quite a few fleeting utopian moments. Very fond memories and very, you know, poignant, you know, life-changing, like, little episodes there that, you know, we've stumbled across on our adventures. And you know, even now when I think back, you know, and I was thinking about Utopia and I was thinking about, you know, what that would be, my mind wandered back to that time.
Yeah, I agree. There were some real moments of freedom, wasn't there, as well, and, like, possibility and, you know, standing up to power and thinking, oh, this is possible. It might be possible to change the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, definitely, you know. And I think, like, having been bear witness to those moments, you know, helps maintain my optimism, I guess, you know, in these times of, you know, more troubled times where dystopia does seem to be prevailing and, you know, we seem to be on the verge of some form of apocalypse. Yeah, I feel blessed to have witnessed moments where we have, even however fleeting, where we've seen injustice and justice kind of prevail in a who's that guy, David and Goliath kind of fashion. You know, whether it was at the front of the uranium mine when, you know, we'd all be saying we've got to arrest the head of the mine or whatever, and, you know, we did, we ran a muck, you know, windows were smashed, tires were down, and we're like, this guy's not, you know, leaving unless he's in a dippy van. And yeah, that was pretty utopian for me. I find a sense of peace in a moment like that when, you know, a mining executive can be taken away in a dippy van, and we're still standing there, you know, on Aboriginal land, you know, fighting off a uranium mine, and for a fleeting moment, you know, we won. And for me, I guess, however kind of chaotic and kind of epic and strange that sounds, that's my type of utopian moment. And yeah, justice is fleeting, but when it's there and when you can see it and when you bear witness to such things,
yeah, I like the idea of like peace and peace within the chaos.
Yeah, it's certainly where I find my place of calm, even now, even in COVID, even just in the house full of, you know, wild children running amok, and you know, the whole, I guess, you know, world going down in different ways. Yeah, within that chaos, that creativity, and madness, there's all these golden moments of peace and beauty, and some of them are really small and tiny, and some of them are, you know, life-changing and globally affecting. But yeah, they're all worthy of, I guess, playing a part in a utopian vision.
Yeah, because people could imagine utopia would be something smooth and perfect.
Yeah, but for me, utopia is, I guess, rising to a challenge and prevailing against all odds. And I think it's that journey, that struggle, and that achievement that is utopia.
Mm. I'd love to hear some more utopian moments, because I know you've witnessed quite a few of these little cracks in the pavement.
Definitely. I think when I looked up from the camp in the desert, and there were flares burning and people running, and then I saw these fences bending like pieces of spaghetti, and they were the fences of the Woomera Detention Centre, and people are climbing over, people are jumping through, and people are running, and it was like, wow, you know, the system can take people, lock them up in the middle of the desert, build these giant fences and surround them by these guards and these riot police. But then all it takes is, you know, some people to climb up on those fences and they're bending in front of our very eyes, and people are escaping and people are running to their freedom. And, you know, not, you know, a lot of people got caught, and some people got sent back, but some people got out. And in that moment, we showed an example of not only people power, but the ability to even defy our own imaginations of what was possible. So, you know, moments like that.
Yeah, that was a really extraordinary moment. I was just remembering somewhere in the mix of all of that, I remember like a big blocks of cops. I don't know if they were riot cops, tooled up cops anyway, at the perimeter of the fence, and then suddenly these two whirly-whirlies, like small, like little columns of air, like little whirlwinds, came from the desert and just came through the cops and just scattered them.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, sometimes you witness those phenomenons of nature, and sometimes you witness those signs of things, whether it's, you know, that dust storm coming, you know, to tell you that, you know, the mining company are on their way, or that, you know, that rain that washes away all that angst and pain from, you know, something crazy and horrific that just happened, or, you know, stepping into the ocean and you know, kind of cleaning you of that heaviness of, you know, whatever, you know, crazy shit's gone down. Like all those, yeah, all those things, you know, are part of yeah, overcoming, you know, against the odds and reaching that moment of utopia.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're talking about being in the ocean and being cleansed of the heaviness, you know, I was struck by you know, because you've been through some pretty heavy stuff, and you've been in a lot of quite conflicty kind of situations. But you always seem like such a light person to me. Like, you're someone who's able to take like life quite lightly, even though you clearly care about stuff.
Yep.
So I'm interested in, you know, that seems like a utopian quality, to be able to keep it light somehow.
Yeah. I don't know. I think part of that was maybe just keeping moving. And I think often if you are, you know, in the middle of a storm or in the middle of something, you're almost momentarily suspended from your earthly duties, your domestic duties, all those things that can grind away and, make you feel alive. Like, be in the middle of some bizarre limbo with like a really unknown destiny or future. I like that feeling. Maybe that's it. But it's one of my favorite feelings. It makes me feel relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit trickier now with four children to navigate as well. You know, keep everyone happy. Not everyone finds peace in chaos, but you know, hopefully everyone will learn to be adaptive to the world around them, and that's all we can do, because everyone has different aspirations, everyone has different things that make them feel comfortable. And certainly I think even when it comes to anarchism or any kind of belief or religion, spiritual, or anything, there's going to be a whole lot of people that don't fit that box and don't feel comfortable with that, or know, traumatizes them or triggers them or in some other way. So there's certainly no kind of one all utopian bubble that I think we could all, you know, live in forever. I think it's one of those ever evolving things to meet different needs and to overcome different injustices, face different I guess problems that arise, because they'll always be there. But you know, to make sure our children don't inherit a dying earth.
Yeah, I was thinking about the some of the moments of utopia in terms of like communities or temporary communities or protest camps, or I was thinking about Uncle Kevin, or that walk that they did, or the tent embassy, or I don't know if you want to describe any of those things.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Like, I feel like I've been lucky to experience that, I guess you could call it a temporary autonomous zone, where whether it's like dancing in the middle of a street and the riot cops don't know what to do, or whether it's Uncle Kev saying, you know, this is Arabana land, no mining trucks are coming through here today, I'm lighting a sacred fire and this is where it stops. And, you know, suddenly the state and the laws of the state and the, you know, the conservative the world and all those things slip away, and you are in this time and this moment. You're around a campfire, you're dancing, you're with people, you're sharing this experience that is free from all those, often you're right in the heart of like potential oppression, but within that potential oppression you have found that moment of freedom, and that's glorious, right?
Yes.
It really is. And I guess, you know, we're in this really ancient land here in so-called Australia, and, you know, we've all got a lot to learn about that. I feel really blessed to have met people in my life like Uncle Kev and, you know, Robbie and Isabel Coe and people from the Tent Embassy that have instilled in me at a very young age that government's got no jurisdiction. These laws, these white laws are not made for us, they're not our laws. And just knowing that, feeling, and just knowing that, you know, even just having that, piece of knowledge gives you a certain power, a certain autonomy to look beyond the restrictions that are supposedly in place for your life, because recognized and acknowledged that they're not yours, and that the possibilities are infinite, And yeah, I guess, yeah, open the doors for all kinds of mischief. Yeah,
that's interesting to think about, like law, like the rule of law, like what is a righteous law, what are the righteous laws, and what should have no jurisdiction.
Yeah, it is really interesting, and I hadn't thought about it much really until this COVID thing came up, when suddenly there were laws that I guess could potentially save your life or stop other people from dying. And you know, at first that was kind of confronting because I'd never followed the laws, and you know, to my own degree, I didn't really. I tried, but I guess even like where I live, I'm on the front line in terms of dealing with a community that is, you know, drug affected and traumatized, and often has, you know, can't speak English and needs help with a whole lot of just daily survival needs. So in terms of locking myself away, that wasn't really a viable option, and just had to run with that potential risk, but try to minimise, you know, that and any kind of risk of damage that could happen.
In order to just be a responsible person living in the community that you're living in.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a really interesting kind of thought process to go to, because even talking to Uncle Kevin, he's like, when are you coming to South Australia, you know? And he was like, yeah, these borders, they're not even now, you know, they're not even the borders, they're in this land. Yeah, the borders were shut, and so it was colonial. These are the colonial borders. These are borders made by, you know, the Britain imperialist nations had enforced these borders, you know, only recently, really, you know, just over 200 years ago. So for some of them, they were like, what is this? Why should the border be closed? My country, my land goes either side of that. Like, so that was really interesting to look at. But then the risk of, you know, I guess, an Indigenous population with a really big health gap going on, you know, it was just couldn't even risk COVID entering those spaces where there was healthcare, it was remote, there's like a really low life expectancy already, people with diabetes, mm-hmm. and other, you know, big issues mm-hmm. going on. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, really had to kind of take check on that stuff. And, yeah, for the first time, perhaps side with some of the government policies.
Yeah, an anarchist having to confront the law, yeah, in a different way.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, and it's like how, you know, and in a society that we live in presently, how, I don't know how it would work in a utopian way, could we sustain an autonomous zone with all the egos and personalities and things
that's a challenge, isn't it?
I'm looking challenging. That's why, yeah. I feel like these moments are fleeting. I think people still got a lot of shit to work out before we can probably sustain a utopian vision for all. But, you know, you just got to keep trying, and those moments may be fleeting, but they're worth living for.
I know you're really involved in West Papuan rights as well.
Yeah. At the moment, we're organising a West Papuan exhibition with a whole lot of photographs that just been recently uncovered. My mother's neighbour, who's about 80 years old, and she was a nurse in West Papua, and her partner, a teacher, during the 60s when Indonesia invaded, and a Dutch anthropologist had a whole lot of amazing, you know, photos and documents, anthropological feats that Indonesia had vowed to destroy all that stuff and throw the Dutch out of the country. So she was entrusted to them and managed to hide them and smuggle them back to Australia. So we're going to exhibit, yeah, these photos from the 1920s in West Papua, and the exhibition is called Before the Genocide. So we're using that premise to, bring together a lot of the diaspora, West Papuan diaspora here in Melbourne. My partner came on a canoe with 43 others as refugees from West Papua. So we're hoping to, you know, get everyone together for to share culture, stories, history, struggle, and, you know, educate, I guess, the broader community on the issues that are happening with our closest neighbour. Yeah, so all that's going on, and, you know, and even in those moments, you know, we might be talking about genocide, or we might be talking about some really heavy stuff, but there's I think there's utopia in truth telling as well.
Yes.
And to reach utopia, we can't reach it without that telling, like the history of Australia. You know, there's been so many lies, there's been so many cover-ups, and you know, there's a really big push. You know, Aboriginal people are speaking out, saying we need truth-telling before we can heal, before we can come together and work, you know, and reconcile. Unless the truth is told and these stories are told, you know, the healing can't begin. So, you know, they're all steps that we have to take to, yeah, to
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Moving. It's all moving slowly but surely.
Mm. And then I'm thinking community building as well, like what you're describing, like bringing people together around something like this. That's community building, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's something that I guess COVID taught me a little bit, because I always thought I had to travel thousands of kilometres to put on events in remote and obscure places. But, yeah, it's been every year a lot more local, and there is an amazing wealth of talent and, you know, creative beings and, you know, learning and stuff to be done within my 5K radius. And it's been really good to be forced to do all that.
Yeah, I think that's been a bit of a theme. Like I've heard a few people say that about, you know, finding kind of treasure where they are.
Yep.
But in the opposite vein, I want to hear about the lizard. I want to hear about that.
Yes. So we've been plotting and scheming many, many years ago around a campfire in the desert. You may have been there. We heard the story about the lizard that leaped underneath the Roxby Downs uranium mine. And when they were mining at that point, they were mining right into the lizard's head. And the story was that in that lizard, there was this poisonous yellow liquid, and you don't eat that. You don't just cut it out, you don't eat it, you just leave it. And so the story was that ground there where that lizard is sleeping, don't disturb it, because there's poison in there. And
sure this enough, is an Aboriginal story.
Yes, yeah. It's a traditional story from Arabana and where Fox now is. And that story really stayed in my mind, because I was like, wow, you know, for millions and millions, like how many thousands of years, they knew that uranium was there. They knew that that ground was not to be disturbed. And they tried to warn, you know, people about it. And mining companies went in and took what they could, and there's been a lot of sickness and a lot of death and a lot of destruction ever since. And, you know, for Aboriginal people, knowing that that uranium was dug up from their country, being used to, you know, independent uranium weapons and kill people in other countries, is really devastating, because that land is part of them and part of their story. And yeah, the yeah, a really tragic thing. And for Uncle Kevin too, the water that they were using, still using over 40 million litres of water a day, is being pumped down the Artesian Basin. Really sacred to the Arabana group of people, because it connects all the springs, the mound springs that are their sacred site. And, you know, over the years they'd witnessed those springs drying up, losing their water. And, yeah, it's all going to the mine and becoming toxic tailings. So it's an ongoing struggle. It started in the 80s, still going today. Roxby was planning a massive expansion at Olympic Dam, but over COVID that plan was canned, luckily, so that was a bit of good news. But the destruction still continues, so we still plan to go out there, and Uncle Phil has put out the call to head to the desert once we can, once these borders are open and we've got a bit of a handle on this virus business.
This is the utopian response then, isn't it? The camps in the desert.
Absolutely.
And the actions. And
Yeah, well, the actions are totally a call out for creativity. It's your creative response to the nuclear industry, and it's totally open. It's like you can be as creative or as wild or as radical as you want to be. You know, we want to keep that door, like, wide open, like, bring what you got, because we don't know what's going to work. Nothing's worked yet. We just got to try everything. So whatever it is, bring it on. Let's give it a crack. I don't know, like you see, you know, running naked into the mine, singing opera, I don't care, like whatever it is, like bring it on. let's check it out. You know,
we did quite a lot of crazy circus, didn't we? That's what I'm remembering. Yes. Hip hop circus.
Hip hop circus, sound clash in the middle of the road. I think it had a big fire that melted a big pothole. Yeah, and people did, like, it was amazing the amount of fabulous outfits that people pulled from their cars in the middle of nowhere. very impressive. So, you know, the possibilities are endless, and we need to open those channels and those doors for people to find that creativity and to express their discontent with, you know, the death of the planet in a creative and fabulous way. And, yeah, those moments are utopian.
Yeah, and so that's something that happens every your winter, Australian winter.
Every couple of years. Yeah, it's pretty random. Mm-hmm. You never know. We thought we'd be out there last year, but this year something's going to happen. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it will look like, but it's going to be fabulous.
I just need a teleport machine and then I could be there.
Fond memories of you out in the desert and the future eater, some very gallant shoes and some big teeth.
Oh, it's been lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. The past, present and the future of potential times and utopian moments still ahead of us. I'm feeling optimistic.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. That inspires me that you have optimism. Because you've seen a lot of reasons to have pessimism.
And we've seen just enough amazingness prevail in this world to know, that there's hope.
Thanks for listening, and I wish you many, many utopian moments. If you want to check out Izzy's music, her band's called Combat Wombat, I'll play you a tune now. You can find them on Bandcamp, Combat Wombat. And as it says, Combat Wombat are a political hip-hop crew based in Melbourne, Australia. Producer Monkey Mark, MC Izzy Brown, MC Elf Transporter, DJ Wasabi will take you on an unforgettable ride of truth and rights, mixed with dub heavy beats.
Little bit of gold shining in the murky water, glistening diamonds on random street corners, treasure chest of hope waiting to be discovered, uncover, undercover, below the radar, big brother, when we start picking on each other. Tell the world that we love her. Tell the world. Tell the world. Little bit of gold shining in the murky water, glistening diamonds on random street corners, treasure chest of hope waiting to be discovered, uncover, undercover, below the radar, big brother, when we start picking on each other. Tell the world that we love her. Tell the world. Tell the world.
Like DMT to Terrence McKenna, searching for them sacred blue apples on life's adventures. Unlock all blocks, way we really truly meant to. Propel our present and carry on, still remember. History stolen by mad rulers with cruel agendas, pretending they superior, fearing that we surrender. Either let them get us penned up or pen up. We ain't filling pages on stages with lasers like Lyric Tesla. Breaking ground with the sound of an earth tremor. Enter the calm before the storm, we in the center. Universal dispersal of data in a sense of flux. In amongst some ups and downs, seems you got stuck. So we here to unstuck, till you be yelling. This higher than upper echelons in their deck chairs. Uppercut with a subsonic ruckus to chase them up the stairs. Reclaiming our resources and sharing them till them get there. So magnificent.
smile can bring. Warmth to the heart, light to the dark, an angelic spark, it'll leave its mark. Raw and stark, angry dogs bark, dogs smell fear, but there ain't none here. Tell the world, tell the world.
Each other. There should never be any limit.
Tell the world that we love her.